Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live jazz on Wednesday and Thursday and Sundays. Located at 2359 The Esplanade, visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. Non-Human Radio is also brought to you by Emporium Presents and the Cascade Theater in Reading, presenting world guitar master Jesse Cook on January 24th. The award-winning guitarist incorporates elements of Spanish, rumba, flamenco, jazz, and world music into his unique style. For information and tickets for Jesse Cook's one-night-only performance at the Cascade Theater in Reading, call 243-8877 or visit cascadetheater.org. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Okay, welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. With Martin Luther King Day coming on Monday, we'll be talking about veganism through the lens of King's commitment to social justice and nonviolence, and follow up with a few news pieces.
So Monday is Martin Luther King Day, so I thought we could talk a little about King's struggle for civil rights and equality and relate it to non-human animals. I found a great essay by Nathan Runkle, who's the founder and president of the animal rights group Mercy for Animals. We've talked about a lot of their campaigns and undercover work on the show over the year or so. I wanted to read a few excerpts from it that spoke to my heart, so here we go. People all over the world have been inspired by Martin Luther King Jr.'s tremendous commitment to justice and nonviolence, his courage to speak up for equality, and his recognition of the interconnectedness of social justice struggles. Dr. King famously said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," a critical acknowledgement that if we allow some to be treated unfairly, it lowers the bar for how all of us relate to one another. In other words, no one is free when others are oppressed. And of course, editorializing here by others on this show, we also want to include non-human animals. Injustice and oppression are rampant in our industrialized food production system. Workers on factory farms endure unsafe conditions, and immigrants are often knowingly hired so that their lack of legal standing can be exploited. Slaughterhouses have been ranked as among the most dangerous workplaces in the country. And I'm more editorializing on my part. We have talked about working conditions at Purdue, chicken processing factories. We have talked about deaths on dairy farms from farm workers. So this is not new territory. And going back to the piece, and of course there are the animals. Farmed animals endure egregiously cruel treatment in the name of profit. They are crammed into spaces so small that they can't even turn around, have their tails, ears, and genitals mutilated with no anesthetic, and then they are brutally slaughtered, sometimes while still fully conscious. Dr. King's wife, Coretta Scott King, observed a vegan diet, as does his son, Dexter Scott King. Mrs. King believed that animal rights were a logical extension of Dr. King's philosophy of nonviolence. And his son, Dexter Scott King, once told Vegetarian Times magazine that, quote, "Veganism has given me a higher level of awareness and spirituality. If you're violent to yourself by putting things into your body that violate its spirit, it will be difficult to not perpetuate that onto someone else," end quote. And that little bit, well, that was a quote from Dexter Scott King. And then Runkle's essay goes on to conclude that, quote, "There are many ways in which each of us can take action for peace and justice in our daily lives, such as advocating for meaningful causes in our communities, speaking up when we see injustice, and, of course, choosing to be vegetarian."
Or vegan.
Or vegan. So, anyway, those are just a few little excerpts of a longer piece that sort of touched on what Martin Luther King was aspiring to do. And I thought it was a good essay that speaks to the underlying violence, underlying nonviolence in King's work, right? Not just for the sake of nonviolence, but in the overall scheme of things, the repercussions of violence and hate come back to the hater, right?
Right.
So it's in the interest in establishing a persistent, a viable long-term peace that nonviolence was one of King's core activist principles. I think it's fair to say that practicing nonviolence in one's diet and consumer choices is one way of creating a nonviolent world that lasts. It's not the only way, but it's a way that can be practiced no matter what your other activism is. I mean, if you are working on homelessness issues like Bill Mash's show, mm-hmm. if you're concerned about environmental issues, there is no reason not to at least adopt a vegan diet as just a personal practice, right? Even if you're not like us and getting on the radio and saying, go vegan, it's something that you can do on your own and start to do on your own that is an alignment. It's a nonviolent action that you can do on your own.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I agree, and I think, you know, in the concepts of Martin Luther King's nonviolence, and you talk about Buddhism, and you know, Dharma Voices for Animal. We had animals. We had Sherry on coming at that from a nonviolence perspective. I think we typically tend to say we're vegan because we want to do no harm, and So we're already vegan. So I think you can apply it both ways. If you're, excuse me, if you're, you know, in some other form of activist, going vegan, you know, reduces that violence in your life and makes you acknowledge these other entities have their own rights and lives that they're going about, and it makes you think a little more about your interactions with these non-human animals. And I think that then can carry over into both vegans and other activists interacting with other activists and other groups, that we should also approach them from a nonviolent perspective, because it's activists that tend to infight the most.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And passion rapidly becomes anger, and anger rapidly becomes, you know, tit for tat, and, you know, dark side leads to suffering and all that from Master Yoda. So, yeah, I mean, I think everyone should, you know, bear this in mind on Martin Luther King Day. It's not just a day off from work, though, you know, everybody appreciates that, too. We have these established holidays for good reasons, historical reasons.
Yeah. So, anyway, so just wanted to share that.
Was there an event coming up around that?
Yeah, there is. I'll talk about it in the calendar, but maybe I'll just talk about it now because I really don't want to lose it to time. So on Sunday, January, one moment. Here it is.
A big
okay.
Calendar.
Yep, it is. Okay, on Sunday, January 15th is Chico's annual celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This one will be focused, set up at the Chico City Plaza starting at 2:30 in the afternoon. Chico will celebrate the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King with a rally and a march starting at the plaza, and will walk around town and then end at the Trinity United Methodist Church at East 5th and Flume Streets at 4 p.m. So I guess if you don't want to do the rally, 4 p.m. is your next time to shoot for. To attend the program that they have planned for us, which includes a timely call to action with a talk by Dr. Nandi Sojourner Crosby titled On the Fierce Urgency of Now. Dr. Sojourner Crosby is the chairman of the Chico State Sociology Department, and she's a formidable speaker and thinker. And I know she's been on Sue Hildebrand's show a couple of times. So, and the day is going to close with a shared community dinner at the church social hall. And there'll be music, hip-hop, poetry, and dance. And I don't know whether the dinner's going to be vegan or not, vegan or vegan-friendly or not.
I'll be very angry if it's not vegan. I will not be angry if it's not vegan. Sorry.
You will not be violent if it's not vegan?
Correct.
Okay. We'll handle that. Anyway, I know I'm planning to attend. I'm pretty sure, Danny, I saw you were planning to attend if time allows.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, anyway, hope to see you all there.
Cool. So, our next story is about Tillicum. The orca. So Marine World or Marine Animal Entertainment Park SeaWorld Orlando, you know, they keep changing their names, which is what criminals do, announced on Friday, January 6th, that Tillicum, a 35-year-old captive orca, had died. The 35-year-old whale, who SeaWorld believes died due to a persistent bacterial lung infection, was the subject of the eye-opening 2013 documentary Blackfish, which brought to light the mistreatment of marine animals at the park. And, you know, I'm going to assume that most animals in the wild don't get bacterial lung infections in the ocean.
Certainly,
like a captivity-induced issue. Right?
Certainly being held in the equivalent of a bathtub with, you know, recirculated, filtered water certainly cannot have helped his health.
Numerous other animals, including Dart the dolphin and Una the orca whale, have also recently succumbed to death inside of SeaWorld's merciless tanks. Tillicum was born in the wild off the waters of Iceland in the early 1980s, and after being captured as a juvenile, he then performed in captivity for decades, first at the now defunct Sealand of the Pacific and then at SeaWorld Orlando. SeaWorld also used him in its captive breeding program, and he is known to have fathered more than 20 calves. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals Senior Vice President Lisa Lang called for action in response to Tillicum's tragic death. Quote, SeaWorld needs to release all the remaining animals from its parks, the orcas, beluga whales, bottlenose dolphins, sea lions, walruses, and the other animals who remain in SeaWorld's tanks and exhibits. Tillicum must be the last orca to die inside a SeaWorld amusement park.
They have so many animals. trained animals.
I mean, just think, the word whale, big, you know?
Yeah.
It's gigantic, right? So we're going to take, you know, can we get the biggest thing and put it in the smallest cage and let people poke it with a stick and laugh? You know, it's just tragic.
And, you know, and what activists were calling for was not releasing these animals into the open ocean to fend for themselves. They were asking for refuges, big refuges off the, you know, in the ocean where these animals can be hopefully rehabbed. I mean, there's a lot of groups that have really good track records of rehabbing all sorts of wild land mammals.
Mm-hmm.
Cougars and bears and things like that, and we don't have that huge knowledge base yet to figure out how to teach an orca how to one, survive on his own, and two, how to reintegrate with his or her pod.
Right.
But doesn't mean we can't start trying, and definitely the sooner we start, the better.
Yeah, certainly SeaWorld has made enough money over the years that they could also afford to actually facilitate that if they so chose.
Exactly.
So, and anyway, there's a whole way they could transition to just being an actual education, could have transitioned into just being an education-based organization and still made a lot of money, and they really refused to do.
I think they're trying, I think public sentiment is forcing them to. Because attendance is declining, they're not making the money off these animals that they once did.
I'm not sure at this point that it's going to be successful, because I would expect at this point nobody cares much for them, but we'll see. So, while the park will still keep wild animals captive at their various locations, SeaWorld San Diego, in this case, not Orlando, held its final orca show as part of its planned phase out of orcas as entertainment.
They did that last Sunday.
Yeah. So at least that is a step forward. In related news, vegan race car driver and activist Leilani Munter received a notice from SeaWorld banning her from entering all of the company's properties. Now, why do giant evil corporations ban citizens? Munter had visited the park's Orlando location to pay homage to Tillicum, bringing with her 33 roses, one for every year Tillicum was held in captivity. In addition to the roses, Munter attempted to place a sign near the entrance of the park that stated, quote, "May the four winds blow you safely to your ocean home where you've belonged all these 33 years." Shortly after that, park officials handed Munter a notice and stated that she is not allowed into any of the park's properties indefinitely.
You've been banned.
Yeah, I mean, it's also such a petty thing to do, too, right? For our race car fans in the audience, Munter will be debuting the world's first vegan-themed race car at the historic Daytona International Speedway next month. Munter is one of the top 10 female race car drivers in the world, according to Sports Illustrated. So this isn't some kind of passing fad for her. Munter is a serious vegan athlete. And I can hear the listeners wondering, and I was wondering when I reviewed this and grumbling about the environmental footprint of race car driving.
So it's big, no doubt about it.
I hear the cars go around every Friday night where I live. And I know people love it, but I mean, that's a lot of oil, people. It seems that Munter offsets emissions from her sport by using only solar energy in her pit box and by adopting an acre of rainforest after every race. She will be sponsored by A Well-Fed World, which our listeners may remember from our recent show about Heifer International and other programs that give animals as livestock to developing nations.
Yeah, so Well-Fed World, I guess they're trying to reach a different audience, and so they're sponsoring a race car.
I mean, that's pretty cool, actually, right?
Yeah,
so,
it's smart.
I mean, there's going to be a whole group of people from a certain culture watching cars go round and only turn left. But they're going to be exposed to, you know, a little bit of vegan thinking. And
yeah. And at first, of course, they can mock it. But,
yeah.
You know, maybe their kids.
It's a layer of paint. There's a lot of kids with these things. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, and so for our listeners, A Well-Fed World promotes plant-based or vegan programs that are in opposition to Heifer International, which is the program where you can donate a cow or some bunnies to a developing nation as a way of improving their life.
Which, as we discussed previously, doesn't actually help them.
So. Right. So, anyway. So then, I have one more orca story that I wanted to share. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Animal advocates are also mourning the loss of Granny, the world's oldest known wild orca, who's now believed to have passed away. So if you're a wild animal, you don't necessarily have a body to look at. Granny, who was formerly known as J2 to the marine biologists who studied her over the years, is a member of the J-pod, which is one of three pods, J, K, and L, that make up the population of the Pacific Northwest's southern resident killer whales. She is known to be not just a grandmother, but a great-grandmother, and she was the matriarch of her family. Biologists believe she was about 105 years old.
Wow.
105, right? And Tillicum was 35. And I know in the wild, male orcas don't live as long as the females.
Hmm.
The females live longer. But still, I have to think that Tillicum at 35 was dying prematurely also. Although, pretty long-lived for a captive orca.
Right.
Anyway, according to an update from the Center for Whale Research, which keeps an official census of these orcas, Granny was last spotted back in October of last year, but she hasn't been seen since, so now she is sadly presumed to be dead.
Hmm.
Her life has fascinated and inspired orca advocates, and her longevity has certainly crushed SeaWorld's claims about orca lifespans. It is striking to think about what she has seen throughout her existence and how she has watched her home and family drastically changed because of human action and inaction. Despite protection in both the United States and Canada, orca populations have yet to recover from the trauma of the many captures for public display that took place in the 1970s in this area, right? So Tillicum was from Iceland, but a lot of orcas were taken off of the Pacific Northwest. According to the Center for Whale Research, at least 13 orcas were killed in the course of those captures, while 45 others were delivered to marine parks around the world. Today, right now, Lolita, who is also known as Tukitai, is the only surviving orca from that round of captures, and she's currently being held captive at the Miami Seaquarium.
I like Tukitai better.
Granny's death brings the orca numbers in the Pacific Northwest down to just 78 individuals.
Yikes.
who continue to face a barrage of threats facing ranging from boat traffic and noise to toxic pollutants. And many experts now believe that one of the biggest problems they face is the lack of Chinook salmon, which is their main food source. So the salmon runs are hampered, one, because humans do a lot of fishing of them, as well as the dams on the big Pacific.
So you're telling me, I see all these PBS shows showing glorious orcas and ice, and it all looks fine and dandy, but in that area we're down to 78 orcas.
Yep. Yep.
That makes me feel the opposite of nonviolent.
So orca advocates are calling for a couple of actions to help save these animals, in addition to calling for a removal of dams and restoring water flows and salmon runs. Conservationists have also been working to designate thousands of miles along the West Coast as critical habitat. They've also urged the National Marine Fisheries Service to create a whale protection zone around the San Juan Islands in the Pacific Northwest to protect orcas from noise and other disturbances that might interfere with their ability to hunt. All right. Well, let's go ahead and hear the next news story.
All righty. I was still pondering orcas for a minute. Let me shift gears. Our next story is about the fact that the Mississippi felony animal cruelty law probably won't pass.
So right. It's a good law, but it probably won't pass.
All right. State Senator Angela Burks of Picayune, Mississippi, is trying to get a bill passed in her state that would make a first offense of aggravated animal cruelty a felony crime. It would also allow law enforcement to charge offenders with multiple counts of animal abuse, which they currently are not allowed to do. Hill first introduced Senate Bill 2174 in 2016, which didn't even make it out of committee. She reintroduced the bill for the 2017 legislative session, but she doubts it will get very far. So we all know by now, and law enforcement authorities roundly agree, that the torture and killing of animals is a big red flag that predicts future violent crimes against humans. There's no question that this is true, and yet Hill can't get her bill passed. I wonder why. Oh, the problem is that big agriculture, which profits from industrialized animal factory farming, which we like to call torture and suffering, is worried. In particular, the Mississippi Farm Bureau is Senator Hill's main adversary. There's nothing aimed at farm animals in this bill, but farmers view its passage as a tipping point that will one day force them to change how they can treat their animals. And at the risk of invoking emails, this is very similar to any sort of gun restriction or trigger lock or fingerprint lock that always makes total sense, but everyone agrees, but the can't get passed because nobody wants a precedent. Representative Gary Chisholm, a Republican representing District 37 in Mississippi, told WCBI News that we feel like it's a slippery slope, that if you start with dogs and cats, then it's going to be horses, it's going to be cattle, it's going to be sheep, it's going to be pigs. This is also what the far right uses around things like gay marriage and LGBT rights. These just ridiculous extrapolations. And in this case, it's the law is the law. It wouldn't be a slippery slope, though we would, of course, would want it to be. So thinking about that meaning of what the elective representative was quoted as saying, he said in not so many words that farmers fear being charged with aggravated animal cruelty for doing what they do every day on a routine basis to their animals, right? So they know.
They know, right? That's the key.
Right. And that's just pretty heartbreaking to think about. Chisholm went on to say that even though it deals with cats and dogs, I think they feel like, and legislators feel like, that maybe what we've got on the books is sufficient. If a court judge or the city judge would just put them in jail for 6 months or charge them $1,000, that would be fine. Mississippi farmers apparently think it's good enough punishment to put someone in jail for half a year or fine them a measly $1,000 after they do things like drag a dog behind a car, set a cat on fire, or throw a pet out of a moving car window. Law enforcement, on the other hand, feels that the current laws aren't much of a deterrent and causes their officers to waste time and money dealing with the same people multiple times. And on general, like, there's lots of issues sometimes with law enforcement, but they also know what, in this kind of case, they know that these people are probably not great people, and they're going to be bigger problems in the future, and they probably would like to punish them.
Right. It's putting another tool in the toolbox, right?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't take away, I'm sure, misdemeanor charges. It's just, if something is egregious, they want to have the ability to be able to throw a heavier penalty on that right. on that person.
Though it reminds me, here in Chico, we had the guy who threw the puppy into the trash can.
Oh, yeah.
And beat it, and it was caught on tape, and they did not charge him until public outcry.
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio with host Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico.
And now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights wonderful calendar of events.
Yeah, so coming up on January 14th, this Saturday, the Vegan Red Bluff Potluck is happening in a private residence. Their theme this month is veganized. Find a favorite non-vegan dish and make it vegan. Please check out the Vegan Red Bluff Facebook group for more information and to RSVP. If you hear some enthusiasm in my voice, it's because the Red Bluff vegans are just a really nice and great group of people. On January 15th, coincidentally at the same time as the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King, is the Vegan High Tea event by Stay Healthy Chico. The 220 restaurant has got a vegan-friendly chef on board, and he is hosting a vegan-friendly high tea from 3 to 5 p.m. at the 220 restaurant at 220 West 4th Street in Chico. If you want to sit with the Stay Healthy Chico meetup group, if you want to sit with them, you'll need to look them up on meetup.com and RSVP to their event.
And for some of our listeners, high tea may not mean what you think it means, so please Google it first.
Tea and pastries. So,
yep.
And then another event coming up on Thursday, January 19th, is the Cultivating Community New Year's Nutritional Class. Sign up for a vegan cooking class on Thursday, January 19th through Cultivating Community. Learn how to prepare healthy seasonal vegan dishes using fresh vegetables, whole grains, and unprocessed foods with Cultivating Community. Cultivating Community North Valley is a project of Chico State funded by a USDA Specialty Crop Block Grant. Yay, USDA money being used to fund a vegan cooking class. I love it. For more info, contact Lindsay@grubchico.org. That's Lindsey@grubchico.org. Or call her at 530-680-3217. And you can also get information online at grubed.org. grubed.org. And somebody sent me the menu. What they're making is a roasted cauliflower hummus, an apple cabbage citrus slaw, and a Moroccan sweet potato and lentil stew, which sounds good to me. That stew part especially sounds good. So
lentil stew is great.
Yeah. And then coming up on Thursday, the 26th, we have the plant-based Chico group. We'll be meeting at 6 p.m. at the Chico Grange at 2775 Nord Avenue in Chico, California. This group is focused on whole food plant-based eating for health. If you are facing health challenges like type 2 diabetes or struggling with your weight, this group can help you eat more healthfully at your own pace and without going hungry. That event is free and there will be snacks. All are welcome to attend. All right. That's it for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, send an email to me at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. We have one last bit of business to take care of. Go for it, Danny.
Here's a quote from Martin Luther King for our listeners to ponder. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of challenge and controversy. Jeannie and I will probably be at the rally to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Sunday, and we hope to see you there too.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, please visit the archives at kzfr.org and search for Non-Human Radio. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Tom signing off.
Be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.